This is podtech.net. I'm Jason Lopez at the 2006 Java 1 conference in San Francisco. Sun engineer Bill Shannon concludes his presentation of new features in Java EE 5. This is the second of two parts covering his general session speech.
So let's talk a bit about dependency injection. You've seen some examples of it in our examples here. Dependency injection is another inversion of control technique where the container injects resources, where resources are things like data sources, EJB references, web service references. They're injected into the application, into fields of the application, as you've seen in our examples, or into methods of the application, into setter methods, for instance. The fields or methods can have any protection. And these are injected into application container managed classes. So any classes that the container is managing the lifecycle for can be the subject, can have injection happen into it. So you can inject it into EJBs, you can inject into servlets, inject into JSF managed beans, web service endpoints, and so on. So with dependency injection, this avoids the need to use JNDI in most cases. So let's look at some more examples of this. Here's how you would do resource lookup in J2E 1.4. With your EJB session bean, you might declare a data source field, myds, and then in your create method, you would actually initialize this field by creating a new JNDI initial context, doing a lookup on the initial context with a JNDI name that you had to pick, and assign the result to the myds field. Now, in addition, you had to wrap all this JNDI stuff in a try-catch block, even though there was really nothing you could do if you got the exception. But you know, again, it wasn't just this Java code. You also had to have a deployment descriptor entry that matched this Java code that told it what to do for that JNDI name employee database. So in Java E5, we simplified this with dependency injection. The same example looks like this. Of course, to begin with, EJB is much simpler. It's just this plain old Java object with the session annotation on it. Again, we can declare our myds field, but all we need is that resource annotation on it, and that tells the container that we're using dependency injection to initialize that field. In this example, this is going to cause it to declare a resource named com.example.myejb/myds. That will be the JNDI name of our resource. The container will inject this resource into the myds field, and we don't need any deployment descriptor entry at all with this. Now, that was easy enough, but sometimes you actually want to control the JNDI name that you use with your resources. Perhaps you're using the same resource in different parts of your application, and they all want to coordinate by using the same JNDI name. So by adding an attribute to the resource annotation, you can specify the JNDI name of your resource. So this example, we actually use employee database as the JNDI name of our resource. And in all other ways, this is just like the previous example. The container is going to inject this resource into our application, and we still don't need a deployment descriptor entry. Now, again, this is simple, but there was one other thing that always came up when dealing with a real J2E application, which is that in addition to specifying all these JNDI names that were used in your application, you had to describe how these JNDI names were mapped to the resources that were available in your application server when you deployed it. This is often done by including some vendor-specific deployment descriptor that had this mapping from the application local JNDI names to the global names that the application server used. So to simplify that case, we added another capability to the resource annotation where you can actually specify the mapped name to use for your resource. So if you have a resource in your application server named Oracle Database and you'd like to use that resource for your application, you can add this mapped name attribute to your resource annotation that tells it to use that resource in your application server. So again, this declares the resource, maps it to that Oracle database name in your application server, and you don't need any deployment descriptor, including you don't need any vendor-specific deployment descriptors to deploy this application. So another thing we added to Java E5 was Java Server Faces. Java Server Faces has been around for a few years. We're up to version 1.2 of that, so it's getting to be a mature technology. Java Server Faces is the standard web application framework for Java EE. Java Server Faces 1.0.2 adds the ability to use dependency injection in managed beans, so it fits in well with the platform. It supports the expression language that is shared with JSP, so now JSP and JSF work much better together. And one of the key attributes of being the standard web application framework for Java EE is that there's this large market of JSF components available to you. So there's over 200 components from over 20 vendors already available. This means that instead of having to write this for yourself for your application, you can take advantage of these pre-existing components that other people have built for you, include them in your application. You'll find that many of these components include interesting things like support for AJAX. And in fact, the Java Blueprints catalog has several AJAX components for JSF. You can use those, incorporate them into your application, save yourself a lot of work, and create a much more interesting application much more quickly. Here's just a screenshot showing some of those AJAX-enabled Java Blueprints JSF components so that you can use them to build your Web 2.0 applications. We use it to build the Web 2.0 Java Pet Store that you've seen something about already. So in addition to making it much easier to write the Java code in your application, we've also made it much simpler to package your application for deployment in Java EE. So we've had introduced many more cases where in your application package, you don't need a deployment descriptor at all. So you can have an EJB jar file, no deployment descriptor needed. You can have a web application with JSPs, web services, don't need a deployment descriptor there. An application client doesn't need a deployment descriptor. And packaging all these different module types together into an EAR file, you don't need a deployment descriptor in that case either. So let's look at some examples of that. Here's a simple web application. Might have an index page that tells something about the application. Perhaps it uses an image. Might even have a web service in that application. Take these three classes, put them into a WAR file. You have a complete web application. You don't need a web.xml file. You don't need a webservices.xml file. You don't need a JaxRPC mapping file. You don't need any of those XML files. You just need these straightforward classes in your web application. Enterprise applications are also much simpler. We've introduced some rules and some conventions for packaging enterprise applications. So if you have an EAR file that has a .war file in it, that's going to be a web application file. If you have a .rar file in there, that's a resource adapter. You can also have a lib directory in your EAR file. And in that lib directory, you can put jar files that you want to be shared across your application. So that's much simpler to deal with the shared libraries in your application. No longer do you need to mess with those class path manifest headers. Just put your jar files in the lib directory, and they'll be available to all parts of your application. If you have a jar file in your EAR file that has a main class attribute in it, that's going to be an application client. If you have a jar file that uses EJB annotations, like that stateless annotation, that's going to be an EJB jar file. So looking at an example here, this is an EAR file for my application. I could have a lib directory with a shared jar file that's used across my application. I could have a WAR file that is my web user interface for my application, a client jar file that is my swing-based application client user interface for my application. And I could have my business logic in an EJB jar file. And I could put all those together into an EAR file. Don't need that application.xml file anymore. I've got a complete enterprise application package just with that. So we've looked at some simple applications to show you how easy it is. Let's look at something a little bit more realistic. Adventure Builder was a sample application used with J2E 1.4. In the J2E 1.4 version of that application, it took 67 classes in over 3,200 lines of code for that application. Rewriting that application to use Java EE 5 capabilities, we can reduce that to 43 classes in just under 2,800 lines of code. That's a pretty good reduction in the complexity of the application, 36% fewer classes to manage in my application with the same functionality. Roster App was another sample application. That one kept track of a roster for a sports team. It's a smaller application. In J2E 1.4, that took 17 classes, almost 1,000 lines of code. Rewriting that for Java EE 5, We can do that in 7 classes with just over 700 lines of code. So that's a pretty good reduction in the number of classes in the application, but that was only part of it. This application also required 9 XML files with almost as many lines of code in the XML files as there was Java code in the application. In Java EE5, we can get rid of those and have just 1 XML file. It's that persistence.xml file. 5 lines of code, very simple, huge reduction in the amount of XML you need to deal with to create an application. So I've talked about a number of the new aspects of Java EE5. Here's the complete list of new things. I haven't talked about all of these things here. The JSP standard tag library, again, that's been around for years. We've added that to the Java EE5 platform. That'll help you in writing your JSP applications. Again, more reusable components that you can use in your JSP applications. Stacks is a streaming API for XML. That makes it much simpler to deal with XML documents and much higher performance as well. In fact, we like that one so much, we've used that in the implementation of our web services stack to get good high performance web services. The web services metadata specification, that was one that defined all those annotations you saw for defining web service. So that web service annotation, that's defined by the web services metadata JSR. Java Persistence API I've talked about, JAXB, JAXWS, talked about all of those. Common annotations define many of those annotations for things like dependency injection. So that resource annotation that you saw, that was defined by the common annotations JSR. And again, I've talked about Java server faces. So in addition to those things that were completely new to Java EE5, there's also some things that were there in J2E 1.4 that we've updated for Java EE5. EJB 3.0, significant updates there, much easier to develop EJB components with Java EE5. We've also updated JSP, so now JSP and JSF share an expression language, so they work much better together. And we've also done some minor updates across the platform in these other APIs. So last year we announced Project Glassfish. Project Glassfish is building an open source Java EE application server. This is the application server that is the reference implementation for Java EE5. It's all open source. We encourage you to go explore the Glassfish community. You can download the latest builds there. It's all free to download. It's all free to deploy. We've got a good-sized community going there. We've got over 2,200 members already. Almost 300,000 downloads of Project Glassfish. So that's going along really well. And you can watch for information about Project Glassfish at the aquarium. So Java EE5, it's here, it's ready. You should all go try it out today. But I wanted to say just a few things about what we've got, what we're thinking about for the future of Java EE, because we are by no means done with Java EE. There is much more work to consider. It's still very early in our thinking about Java EE6, so there's not really much I can say that's very definitive. What I'd really like to do is encourage you to give us feedback on how we're doing with Java EE. What are things that you'd like to still see improved in Java EE? What are additional things you'd like to see added to Java EE? Where did we not make it quite easy enough yet? Are there things we could do to make it even easier that we haven't done yet? And you know, we'd also like to hear where we got it right so that we can know what we did well. So looking at Java EE futures, we have a number of different directions that we could go. And these are by no means mutually exclusive. We could grow Java EE upwards, expand into things like composite applications. Perhaps it's time to add portlet support to the Java EE platform. We could define how high availability or clustering support should work in Java EE, standardize that across all the application servers. We could also grow Java EE downwards and add more support for scripting. Perhaps we could add things like JavaScript and JSP pages, add support for more things like web hosting and application hosting environments, web dev, things like that, to make it simpler for the lower end applications to work with Java EE. We could also grow Java EE sort of in the space that it already exists. We could continue to improve the APIs that we've already got there. We could add more Ajax support to Java EE. We could add more support for WS Star specifications for Java EE. We've got quite a few things that we can consider for future releases. We need your feedback to guide us into which of these are most important to do first. So to summarize, Java EE is much easier. I hope I've convinced you that it's very easy to write Java EE 5 applications. You should go out and download the SDK, try it out for yourself. If you're interested in Glassfish, get involved in that community. You can help us develop the Java EE reference implementation, evolve that. And we really need your feedback on Java EE. Now, before I turn it back to Graham, I just wanted to mention one more thing, which is the treasure map for Java EE. We'd like you all to go to the pavilion, get the Java EE treasure map, explore all the booths for all the Java EE vendors, fill out the treasure map, maybe you'll win a wonderful prize. And with that, I'll hand it back to Graham to tell us about Java SE futures.